Welcome back, Chelsea fans, to the latest episode of the Blues on Parade podcast, where all we do is talk Chelsea and talk shit about everyone else. Today, I'm joined by Sam. And Sam, we don't have to worry about a thing. Because every little thing is going to be all right.
Ha-ha! I like that song. I love it when it's played for us, too. Dude, Galadog. That's all I gotta say. My intro to this episode is just Galadog. What a fucking guy.
Shutting all the haters up, including myself from last.
Galadior? Anyone? Galadior? Galador?
Listen, man, the redemption arc is real, and the vibes are back, I think. At least for now.
Yeah, exactly. When you're winning, like, if winning fixes everything. Let's just see, like, we've had moments like this before, and then went through, like, a 3 or 4 match drought, and vibes return to where they've been most of this season, so let's keep it up, baby.
I'll take any vibes we can get. I mean, probably the most uneventful first half of football I've ever watched in my entire life. But the redemption story in the second half, which is really nice. So I actually came up with a title before we recorded some. The boys have balls. I think that's the theme of the last week with Chelsea Football Club. But let's just get kind of right into it, man. Chelsea 3, Crystal Palace 1. Go through the starting 11 really quick. No changes from last game outside of Thiago Silva replacing the injured Benoit Badiashile, who is going to be out for the foreseeable future with a groin injury, which is kind of a bummer. But we had Petrovic returning in goal, Malagusto on the right, Thiago Silva and De Sassi partnering each other at center back, Ben Chilwell out on the left, Caicedo and Enzo, double pivot with Noni on the right, Connor Gallagher in the middle, Nico Jackson initially starting on the left, but eventually drifted towards the middle of the pitch, which was kind of a nice adjustment to see, and Cole Jermaine Palmer starting up top, the double assist man. So yeah, I mean, like I said, that first half was sorry ball, to say the least. Possession without a purpose, 80% possession on the day, 400 on the half, 486 passes completed with only 6 touches in the opposition box and 1 shot that wasn't even on target. That came from Connor Gallagher in the 46th minute. If I'm not mistaken, I think we broke the Premier League record for passes completed in a half without a fucking shot on target.
I believe that stat is correct. That was the second Premier League record we set this year. What was the other one? I forget. What I was thinking of was we're giving up the most goals per match in the Premier League era, like Chelsea's Premier League era. So.
Yikes.
Forget that. But yeah, it was really ugly. Like, just the buildup was so slow. I don't know what the hell was going on.
I could kind of tell you a little bit about it, because I know you kind of drifted away in the first half. And I did too at points. Like, there were periods where I was looking down at my phone for, like, you know, a good 4 or 5 minutes, but there was no penetrative runs. It was so blatantly obvious. Like, against Villa in the last match, we seemed to play right through them. And granted, they did come at us with a more open attacking mindset, right? So they kind of left themselves vulnerable for the counter. But I know Palace had a low block, but at the same time, there were spaces in behind, especially on the wings. And I wasn't seeing any sort of diagonal runs. The combination play between Cole Palmer and Noni was just a stark difference from the Villa match, where I mentioned in the solo pod, Noni and Palmer kept kind of rotating, and Noni would tuck in at times and Palmer would drift out wide, and it would sort of pull their defense apart. The center backs really had no idea who to pick up. And in this game, it seemed like Madueke was just strictly on the right-hand side. He didn't really penetrate much, for lack of a better word. And I think that kind of goes for all of the attackers. Nico Jackson on the left-hand side initially. I know he tucked in later on, but we weren't seeing those runs in behind. We weren't seeing them stretch the defense. We weren't seeing them, you know, get in 1v1 situations with the fullbacks where they're defending on their heels. Everything was very comfortable. It was all in front of them. And they, credit to Palace, I mean, they were undermanned in this match. There was a couple players I didn't even know existed that played for them today.
Oh, yeah.
Some of their new signings. But, you know, credit to them. I mean, they came with a game plan. They defended well in the first half. And as a result, we didn't really do shit, which was frustrating. But, of course, as always, somebody has to score a worldie on us. Jefferson Lerma, I think this was his first Palace goal. And not a guy that's known for scoring fucking worldies. Petrovic had no chance at getting fingertips on that. I mean, it was pretty much a perfect hit. But Caicedo caught in possession. And again, the lack of experience in this situation. Madueke standing right there. All he has to do is put his foot through the ball and just clear the lines, reset, and we go again. But instead, he tries a cute little flick. Jefferson Lerma nicks it off of him and smashes in his screamer. I guess the weak link in that first half, Sam, I mean, we could point out a couple players. Caicedo got caught in possession a couple times. But Madueke, It's a little frustrating seeing him play at times, because he has a great performance against Villa where he was probably one of our biggest threats just on the whole, and then comes into the Palace match and just doesn't really do much. I mean, the stats, they weren't terrible. I mean, 3 out of 4 dribbles completed. He had 5 ball recoveries, won 5 out of his 8 duels. But to the eye test, he just wasn't really offering much. And Malo Gusto was busting a nut running up and down the right-hand side. And Madueke just couldn't seem to find him enough. And I don't know. I mean, for me, that was like the big weakness in our attack in that first half. Granted, we didn't have any penetration anywhere else on the pitch. It's not like Nico or Palmer or even Conor Gallagher really did much themselves, but
so you're saying that Malo Gusto busted a nut even with a lack of penetration? That's basically the that's the synopsis of what you just ranted on.
More like he got blue balled in that first half because he tried really hard, but
hey, those are your exact words. You said he busted a nut the way he played. I know that's not what you meant to say. He was busting his ass.
Busting a nut. I mean,
No one busted their nut until the second half, Zach.
I think nobody busted their nut harder than Axel De Sassi with that goal.
Dude, so like you said, I didn't really pay attention that first half. Like, I was in my office, like working, so like I couldn't really pay attention. And then we were already down in. You have the title of the pod, The Boys Have Balls. Like, I did not think that going into the second half. Like, this whole season, once we concede, it just, like, is all downhill from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I expected, like, I wanted to see the second half. But, like, after Conor Gallagher scored that first goal, like, a minute in, I was like, all right, I'm clocking out. I'm going to watch the second half, like, just all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, like, but thankfully I did, because that second half performance was perfect. That was unbelievable. I was so pleased with the way that we looked.
I mean, it was night and day, wasn't it? And you know, I guess the first thing we mention is the series of events that led up to the second half. Michael Oliver fucks around with his headset and decides to wait right before kickoff to fix it.
That was typical, so ridiculous.
Typical English referee. Yeah, he's dog shit, man. All of them are. But you know, Bob Marley starts playing, and obviously Palace is 1-0 up, so their fans are singing it in full voice. Then we finally get the half started, and Nkunku comes on for Noni. Cole Palmer goes out onto the right-hand side. Connor Gallagher immediately scores, literally 1 minute into the half. And all of a sudden, the Chelsea fans start singing Bob Marley, even louder than the Palace fans
did. I didn't
did.
Hear that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was that's fucking amazing. Great. It was.
We've come a long way from, like bantering with the other fans by singing "We're fucking shit" to us now bantering with the other fans and singing their songs. It's a little bit different, but that's funny.
I mean, I guess that's a credit to the away fans, especially in the Villa match. I mean, they were great the whole entire time, singing in full voice and just kind of staying behind the team. I know it's really hard not to get negative when we go down a goal, especially on the road. And we've seen sometimes at Stamford Bridge where the fans are, you know, I mean, it wasn't long ago against Wolves just last week where we were booing players when they get subbed off or booing the team at the end of the half, at the end of the match. But the away support in the last two games has been spot on. I mean, I can't praise them enough. So credit to all those Chelsea fans that showed up and sang in full voice. I mean, this is the recipe. This team is so fragile in terms of their confidence. And I think it goes a long way when the fans kind of stay positive. And I think that speaks volumes to, you know, just the last two performances. I mean, you see it. When there's vibes in the stands, there's vibes on the pitch. I mean, it translates to the players, especially these players that have been probably the most disconnected from the fan base. This player and these players and this manager, especially, they've just been so disconnected from the fans, and there really hasn't been a connection until this last week, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, because we also got, on top of all that, like, the Enzo rumors that came out. Mm. Like, you know, obviously turned out to all be bullshit, but, you know, he scored so in himself. The past, too. What was that?
He said so himself. I think ESPN interviewed him, and he said, like, I'm talking now because, like, these rumors are just, like, mm-hmm. flat-out lies. Like, I'm here to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he just, explicitly, like, reference to those rumors. So, and then, you know, I mean, that's you know, like, that was, like, I feel like the last, like, if that were to be true, like, that would have been, like, the dagger in the heart, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, we already are really all down on Madueke. I mean, Madueke too, but Mudryk, mm-hmm. like, with this Enzo thing, like, it would have been, like, a disaster, I feel like. But that's It completely 180'd, and yeah, where the vibes are good, Zach, I'll admit it. Like, it's like, I didn't have, like, I thought it was kind of like BS after the Villa match. Like, mm-hmm. we've won matches before, and it's just like, it always feels good after a win. Like, sure, like, that Enzo goal was a fucking worldie, but, like, that's not going to be the moment that completely, like, turns the season around. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, it is the momentum. I feel that
the boys are confident. I mean, we'll to see. Say the least. And I mean, I titled it "The Boys Have Balls" because the adversity they faced going into the Villa match. I mean, it's one of the best. It's one of the hardest places to play in the last 18 months. I think Villa only lost 3 or 4 home games since Unai Emery even took charge there. So
they also haven't won at home in 2024. I don't think.
Who?
Villa.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think they've only played like 2 or 3 games, and they haven't won yet.
I mean, look, Villa were shit on the day, but nonetheless, nobody expected us to win. Even the commentary was saying that they didn't expect us to win. And then, you know, we face that adversity. We go into that match. We play extremely well. We start this match playing like shit, and we're thinking, oh man, here we go again. Because it seems like every single time we take a step forward, we take 2 steps back. But then coming into the second half, the mindset was just completely different, right? We had killer instinct. And I want to start by talking about Connor Gallagher, because this is a guy that I fully supported to start the season. And then, you know, as the team sort of had a downturn in form, I'll be the first one to put my hand up and admit that, you know, I thought Nkunku should have replaced him in the lineup You know, as soon as he came, as soon as he got healthy. But that's pretty much Poch's boy, right? I mean, he played almost every single match for us that he's been available this season. And I mean, he comes into this game against his former club that he was on loan to, scored the equalizer in the 46th, scored the winner in the 90th. And mind you, his last trip to Palace last season, he also scored a 90th minute winner as well. But he just had a day, man. I mean, three chances created, two shots on target out of the three that he took, scored the two goals, like I mentioned, one of them off of a beautiful ball from Malo Gusto. And listen, if this is Conor Gallagher in January or December, he puts that over the bar. He did really well to keep his head over the ball and just kind of, you know, volley it, you know, right past the keeper.
Yeah. And
when the ball got played in, I'm thinking, oh shit, you know, he might fuck this one up, but took it beautifully nonetheless. Good composure. And then for the winner, I mean, to pick out the bottom corner, that's not a mistake. That's not just a formality. I mean, he really picked out that bottom corner, took his shot really well off the cutback from Cole Palmer. And I mean, I got to ask you, man, we have this bet going about Conor Gallagher this season.
No, bet's over. Bet's over.
The last season. Yeah, I mean, all right then. I mean, but did he shut the haters up for the most part? I mean, he shut me up today, and especially against Villa. He was absolutely phenomenal.
You won your bet, Zach, because Gallagher has been good this season, for sure. I mean, I know we have, like, what, like 13 matches left?
Yeah.
In the regular season, I mean, in the league, so... I think he's been great, or I think he's been good this year, but it just, like, Pochettino honestly pisses me off so much because, like, right now he gets it right in, like, the role that Conor Gallagher should be playing, like, you know, as the 10, you know, and not as, like, a double pivot with Enzo. Like, it pisses me off that he gets it right, like, 25% of the time. Like, the last two matches, he got it right. Like, and then goes back into his old ways, and it's just, like, it's, like, stuff that just your random, like, idiot troll on Twitter would know what to do. Like, these idiots on Twitter know the right way to play him, and then Pochettino, who's supposed to be, like, football genius, just makes the stupidest mistakes. It's, like, keep it simple. I don't know what, like... Conor Gallagher in this role is exactly where he should be playing.
Yeah, and again, you know, in the attack, he was definitely playing behind Cole Palmer, who started at striker, right? And then especially behind Nkunku when he came on, because Nkunku basically, you know, took up the center forward role. But I'm more impressed with the way that he's being deployed defensively, right? He's our first line of defense. I mean, the initial press starts with Conor Gallagher. And his energy up top, just, he doesn't give center backs time on the ball to pick out passes and break the lines. He's always clogging the midfield. And you know, credit to him. I mean, the guy's a yes man. He plays wherever Pochettino puts him. And I know he's been deployed in, what, 3, 4, maybe even 5 different positions on the season. I mean, we saw him play as a shadow striker. We saw him play as a 10. You mentioned a double pivot. He played as an 8 in a midfield 3. I mean, the guy's been pretty much playing everywhere. And honestly, he on the season, you could probably say he's our most consistent midfielder. I know Enzo and Caicedo are really starting to find their feet in the last week or so. But just looking at the season as a whole, you got to give credit to the guy. And all the Twitter trolls that you mentioned, or you know, Twitter managers, let's call them, right? I mean, they know where Conor Gallagher thrives, and it is in this position. And when he was at Crystal Palace, he played a similar role. He chipped in with goals. He chipped in with assists. We haven't seen that this season up until recently, but now that he's fully confident with his final ball, or you know, with his finishing, especially. I mean, we could really start to see him grow between now and those, you know, 12, 13 games that we have left in the season. And that's actually what I'm really looking forward to more than anything with Conor Gallagher, is to just kind of see how, you know, okay, now he's fully confident. He got the goals. He has the assists. He's creating, you know, 2, 3, 4 chances a game consistently. I'm curious to see if he, you know, maybe even touches 10 goal involvements on the season. I think it's totally possible. I know we have City coming up this week, but, you know, nonetheless, I think he might be able to do it. I mean, he's getting on the end of crosses now. He's finding himself in and around the box where he feels most comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's kind of exciting.
I'm looking. Right now he's at 2 goals, 4 assists.
Yeah, so he needs 4 more goal involvements. That's completely doable. As long as he keeps playing. Yeah. And the thing I like the most about him, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, his availability. He seems to be the only guy on this team that can't get injured.
Yeah.
And I hope I didn't curse it by just saying that.
No, stop. Yeah, knock on wood right now.
Knock on wood, yeah. I have a wooden desk. I just knocked on it. What I wanted to mention was the Twitter trolls and, you know, the Gallagher out army, because if you really think that Conor Gallagher only offers energy in this team, you're really not watching his game.
Mm-hmm.
Because the statistics are telling me otherwise.
I'm so happy that, I'm proud to say that I never got onto that train. I've been against selling Gallagher since the rumors came out. And despite him having, I'd say he probably had, 4 or 5 performances in a row where he didn't perform very well, I still, from what I'd seen this season, I still recognize, how much value that he can provide to the squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep on going back to this, but it had to do 100% with the way that Pochettino was playing him.
Yeah.
He really, honestly, just mixed up where he should be playing Enzo and where he should be playing Gallagher.
Yeah.
And he's made the swap, and it's something that was so obvious that everyone knew, and he decided not to do it. So I'm happy that I never made that you know, switch onto the other side. So because he's been good. He's been great, I think, this season.
And to kind of add to your point, he didn't just change Gallagher's role. Like you mentioned, he changed Enzo's role. He kind of gave him a free role to where he can, you know, kind of roam around the pitch and find the ball wherever the space is, right? So he's kind of playing this positionless center mid in the attack. But, you know, defensively, you know, he always recovers. He always puts in the hard yards. And Caicedo, too. I mean, you could even argue that we're seeing Caicedo drop into the defensive line to collect the ball more often and sort of kickstart our attacks and collecting the ball from the center backs more than he ever has, which is something that was really missing from his game, because I think the one underrated aspect of his game that we're really starting to see now is his techers. Like, the guy has a great first touch. You know, he's bouncing 1-2s off of Enzo. He's bouncing 1-2s off of Gusto and Chilwell as well. Finding the long ball, his pass completion rate is, you know, insane, considering the position he's playing. And you know,
I haven't looked at it in comparison.
But this is a credit, in a way, to Pochettino, right? And also, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not taking anything away from the players, because, you know, they really did step their game up. But I want to talk about somebody that's just absolutely, I'm thrilled with. I would argue he was, you know, one of the best signings we made under the Boley era, if not the best signing we made under the Boley era behind Cole Palmer. That's Malo Gusto. Ooh. Another insane performance from him. I mean, yeah, Reece James is out, and I still take Reece James over, a healthy Reece James over a healthy Malo Gusto, but the guy's 20 years old, man, and he is playing like a fucking, you know, 10-year veteran.
Yeah.
2 chances created on the day. He obviously had that one big chance created that led to the Conor Gallagher assist for the first goal. 2 dribbles completed, 3 crosses completed, 7 ball recoveries. He won more than half of his duels, 9 out of 14. I mean, just I said, you know, he was busting his nut or busting his ass.
Busting,
you know,
a nut.
Consistently overlapping on the right-hand side. But, you know, he did come off with a little, you know, niggle, I guess you can call it.
Yeah,
it wasn't a full-on injury.
I saw the moment he requested a sub, and I was like, yeah. Ugh. Because he continued playing on it. And, if you know the chance that I'm talking about where, was it Cole Palmer? It was a nice build-up. I think it was from the left side. Sterling to Nkunku. Like Nkunku kind of overran the ball. Then he dropped it off to
Sterling.
Palmer. And no, Palmer. And then Palmer passed it to Sterling. Malagusto was making a run up the right, and he was wide open if Palmer played it off to him. So, and that was after he had requested a sub. He still made that run. So I don't think it's as bad. Like this injury, whatever he did, it's not that bad if he was still able to make that run. So that's, I mean, this is my own non-medical observation, you know? So I'm hoping that's not a bad thing. But yeah, I mean, dude, he's the way he's playing just like brings up a lot of bad thoughts in my head. Like, what do we do with Reece James? Like, if, like, you know, like if the right offer comes, like,
No, don't
you
say it.
know, but no, I was just like thinking about this, like Malagusto might become too good to be a backup. So
Yeah,
what? We're gonna sell
I agree with that.
Malagusto? Like, would you rather sell Malagusto or sell Reece James?
I mean, listen, I think in any competitive side, especially if you want to compete in multiple competitions in the future, you got to have depth at the fullback position, especially with the way we play. And I would argue that Malo Gusto is probably our best backup right back, obviously, but he's probably our best backup left back too. When he's played on the left-hand side, he's provided assists, he provides the same type of runs, the same type of outlet in the attack, and we know what his defensive abilities are. I mean, he's very sound defensively, minus the Wolves game, right? But I do agree with you in the sense that he is too good to be a backup. And the thing is, he keeps getting better. You know, of course,
He's
he's going to
20
have
years
these
old.
blips every once in a while, but I feel like when Malo Gusto has a blip, it's when the whole team isn't playing well. But generally speaking, when a team plays well, Malo Gusto is one of, if not, you know, in contention for man of the match every single time we win while he's in the side. And I agree with you. I don't necessarily think it's a full on, you know, he popped his hammy, we're fucked. I think it was one of those situations where maybe he cramped up a little bit or felt something and was like, you know what, if I push it any further, I'm really going to be playing a risky game. So might as well ask for a sub. We have a fully capable backup, you know, to Malo Gusto in that sense with Alfie Gilchrist, the guy that could come on and sort of not necessarily provide the same attacking outlet, but just
Oh, definitely.
provide the same kind of energy and running that Malo Gusto does on the right hand side. But yeah,
Yeah, but
no.
can we just take a second to talk about Alfie, because this was probably his worst performance, I think. Just very nervy, a lot of mistakes, like defensively, and then also just his distribution was pretty poor. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, like, he's a kid, just like how I'm not going to say like every great performance he's a world beater. I'm not going to say like a poor performance he's shit, you know. I just wanted to point out the fact that like you say that we have a capable backup right back, but I'm still not 100% confident in like Alfie Gilchrist playing a full 90 against a Premier League side right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a fair observation. But, you know, I think the thing with Alfie is that he's more cut from the old school cloth, right? Like I know he's a young kid and he's in this new generation of footballers where, you know, fullbacks are basically auxiliary outside mids in the attack. But Alfie's really just an old school defender. I mean, he's great in 1v1 situations. He puts his foot through every single tackle, which I absolutely love. He's fully committed on the defensive side. But I do agree with you. I think that's sort of the next question that's going to be asked of him, you know, to see if he stays in this Chelsea squad and, you know, next season and seasons beyond that is, you know, can he get forward? Can he, you know, have the sort of technical ability or develop the sort of technical ability to keep him playing as a Premier League level fullback? But generally speaking, I think his qualities are more suited towards center back, even though he's not the biggest. He doesn't have necessarily the biggest frame. His type of physicality and his type of energy is, I think his long-term future might be at center back as opposed to, you know, right at being
Yeah.
a backup right back or backup left back, whatever it might be.
Yeah, because like I was just basing that off the eye test, but like even if you look at his numbers, like he came on one in the 85th minute, 84th minute.
Something like that, yeah.
So he played 13 minutes, dribbled past once, zero out of one ground duels won, one out of two aerial duels won, three possessions lost, one out of three accurate passes. Like,
but I do think a perspective.
Bad in 13 minutes. Sorry,
it's all about it's all right. I think it's all about perspective to kind of play to counter argue that. You don't bring Alfie Gilchrist on to attack, to go chase a match. When he came on, we didn't have the lead yet. It was still 1-1. We were still on the front foot. So, like, again, you can't ask for him to sort of be that same attacking outlet as Gusto. And that's why I mentioned earlier, I think that's the next evolution of his game. I think that's the next thing he needs to work on is sort of, you know, being comfortable on the ball, being comfortable with 1-2-touch passing, overlapping. You know, maybe even improving on his crosses or his decision making in terms of the runs he's making off the ball. That's something that was missing today as well. But again, I think seeing Alfie's performance today just highlights how good Gusto was. Because the second Gusto came off, that right hand side, we didn't really have any sort of attacking threat unless Cole Palmer was in a 1v1 or, you know, catching them on the counter.
And which is really weird because I feel like we were exclusively attacking down the right hand side. Like after that sub, which made no sense. Because I thought Ben Chilwell had probably his best match since coming back from injury. It's still he's still not 100%. But like I don't know why he didn't play it more on the left. Like again, like it's just these things that shock me in Pochettino's decision making. It really doesn't make sense. But
I have another counter argument for that.
Oh, let's hear
it. Two words: Raheem Sterling. That's why we didn't attack down the left hand side.
But to be honest, like I think Sterling like created like three chances. Like
he had a hockey assist. I mean, he if he doesn't connect with Palmer, we don't get the winner.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's that. He had one cross to De Sassi that De Sassi, like, hit right at the keeper. And then, like, the play that I mentioned earlier, that it ended up with him, like, kicking the ball right into the center back. But the lead up to it, like, he played a really nice ball to Nkunku. So I thought, honestly, that was, like, a very positive Sterling performance. Even if, you know, like maybe he's destined to come off the bench.
I mean, look,
that's his best role.
I'm glad Poch finally, you know,
hell yeah, man,
bit the bullet and benched his ass. And I do think it was a positive performance on the whole from him, just kind of looking at his whole body of work this season. I
still
hear,
not tracking back, but yeah,
still doesn't track back. But like, I mean, you look at the build up to the winner, and it's. Sterling did what he does best, cutting inside, you know, driving forward with the ball and, you know, making the supporting run. And I just want to see more of that. Like, I don't want to see him in these situations where he's holding up our play in and around the box and kicking the ball right into a center back shins. You know, frustrating when he came on, because I think right when he came on, he took that extra touch that he didn't need to. He should have hit that ball first time. We probably would have scored there. And then he fouls a player immediately, which is like a typical Raheem Sterling, you know, first 30-second, you know, action. Like he runs right into someone's backside and takes a stupid foul 70 yards away from our goal.
Yeah.
But on the whole, yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think it was generally a positive performance from Sterling.
That does not mean we want him to come back into the starting 11. Definitely not.
Not by any means. But I just wanted to put it out there that we both think it was positive. That way, all the haters that say all we do is shit on Raheem Sterling, we have an agenda against him. We don't. We just call a spade a spade.
I do have an agenda against him. I'll admit that. But I'll admit when he has a good performance.
Yeah,
I'll
admit that. That's fair.
Hey, at least, at the very least, I'm consistent. Like, I make my opinions known from the start, and you know, I don't like switch back and forth unless, you know, I have to admit I'm wrong about certain things.
Maybe you can teach Raheem Sterling a little bit about, you know, consistency.
Maybe I can teach you a couple things about speaking English.
Well, we had a Thiago Silva injury. Obviously, I mentioned earlier, he came on to replace Badia Shiel. It didn't look like Levi Colwill was ready to play a full 90. Even though when he came on, he did relatively well. I thought we were moving the ball much more quickly along the back line. But he comes off in the 61st minute after making a pretty impressive block. I think it was Mateta, who kind of had his number all game. And I got to say, man, Mateta's a fucking handful. Like, I know he doesn't chip in with a lot of goals or assists, but he's a big boy. He's quick. He's strong. I mean, he was bodying Thiago Silva quite a few times in this game.
I remember last time we played them, we thought the same thing. And my prediction was that after that match, Chelsea, there would be rumors of Chelsea looking at to buy him.
He's not a bad player. Yeah, no, yeah. He's good. He's decent.
Yeah, he had good performances in both matchups.
But, you know, Thiago Silva coming off, obviously, you know, I don't wish injury upon anybody, and Thiago Silva is a fucking club legend. He's arguably one of, if not the greatest center back in his generation. I mean, he's up there with, you know, the Sergio Ramoses and so on and so forth, just in terms of that generation of footballer. But, you know, he comes off with his injury, and Colwill came in, and I think the impact was kind of noticeable, at least in possession. We were able to play a higher line, so the defense was much closer to the midfield. And I think just having a natural left footer, you know, playing on the left-hand side, does us a lot of good. It just helps the ball progression. Even though, I will admit, in that first half, there were times where Thiago lingered on the ball, but he had no other choice. Like, at some points, the midfield was 25, 30 yards away from the center back. So, you know, the only thing he can do in those situations is pass side to side or backwards. But I guess the main question here, Sam, is, you know, we saw a little cameo of Levi Colwill. He did play well when he came on, like I mentioned. The Zassi and Colwill against City, right? Has to be. Because I know Chalaba came back a little bit, came back into the squad. He made the bench this match, but I think he could do, you know, he could play a significant role in this team too. I'm not down on Chalaba whatsoever, but is it Colwill's time now? It kind of feels like that.
I mean, Colwill, the only reason why he stopped starting was because he got hurt. Like, now that he's back, I don't see any reason why the answer is 100% yes, that's our pairing. Like, Chalaba hasn't played a minute for us this season. Mm-hmm. Right? Has he played a minute for us? I don't think so.
He's been injured, yeah.
So, it would be a huge shock. Unless Levi was still injured or whatever, I don't know. It would be a huge shock if Chalaba got the start over him.
It did give me a little confidence, though, that he was able to kind of handle Mateta when he came on, too, because I was a little worried about that. I'm like, you know, I don't like it when we sub center backs. Obviously, we had to in this situation. I think that's the one position where, like, those two guys need to play the full 90, because it's, if any position is a rhythm position, it's center back, right? But I thought he handled Mateta really well. He was pretty quiet once Colwill came on. I mean, granted, Palace were kind of quiet in the attack too, but yeah, I mean, I'd agree with you. I think Colwill, and now that we're seeing this sort of renaissance, if I could even use that word, with De Sassi, I think that's the pairing for the foreseeable, at least until, you know, when Badia Shiel comes back, you could also rotate him in that back four.
Yeah.
But yeah,
is Fofana supposed to return before the season's over?
I think it's March or April, but I mean, basically the end of the season. So he might get some minutes off the bench. I don't expect him to, like, you know, get multiple starts, though.
Yeah, but okay, yeah. I mean, if it was sooner, like, that's something that I would look forward to as well. Like, Colwill, Fofana is, like, my dream center back pairing, I feel
I'd agree. Yeah,
like
I think every Chelsea fan would agree.
Assuming both are healthy, like that feels like my favorite pairing in the future. But I think the bigger question is what happens at right back. Like if Malagusto isn't fit, like are we really gonna start Alfie against fucking City? Like he's gonna have to defend Jeremy Doku all match.
He
Is he,
might.
like that'll be crazy.
He might have to. Because we can't. It's not like we could put Disasi. Like Disasi's played out there. I don't want him out there, but he's played there.
Well, we don't have any other center
We don't have
backs,
any
like
other
any.
center backs. Yeah. We're really thin, just across the defensive line.
Let me see.
Oh yeah, we'll see. I don't want to be depressed yet and talk about City. I want to talk about Poch first, which might make some people depressed, but I'm not gonna lie. I do have some criticism. That first half was absolutely awful. And granted, if you listen to the last podcast I did, I picked the same starting 11 that Pochettino deployed in the first half. I said, don't change anything. If anything, you might bring in Nkunku in for, a Noni or a Nico. But I
And
mean, you
Thiago
just.
Silva was different also.
Yeah.
Well,
But we
that
knew
was just
that
because of
going in.
injury. Yeah.
Yeah. But and again, I didn't think Thiago Silva was going to be as big of a liability because I knew Palace was going to set up in a low block. So, we could still technically play a high line with Thiago Silva there, even though he got exposed a couple times for pace, but, made amends for it by popping his hammy on a ridiculous block. But the criticism with Poch, man, I mean, we didn't have any wind in our sails going into that first half. It was just tippy tappy, reminded me of Sarri ball, the PTSD of that season. But again, I keep bringing up this word redemption because that's what it was in the second half. I know Conor Gallagher spoke about it, and he said, the manager made a couple changes and. We were able to attack more and play with more confidence and more fluidity, especially, up front. But he brings on Nkunku, which I think was imperative because his runs off the ball, just his general footballing IQ, the way he occupies spaces, even though he's not on the ball as much as we want him to be, he opened up both of those goals for Conor Gallagher. Like he ran front post for one of them. And I think he ran far post for the first one, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, he pulled the center backs away from the defensive mids and opened up that half space for Conor Gallagher to just kind of step into for the cutbacks. Because both of those goals were considered cutbacks, I would say.
Yeah.
That's a good change on his part. Bringing on Sterling, very questionable at face value. But like we said, in general, it was a positive performance, on the whole. So, I mean, I'll start with obviously Nkunku needs to play more. Everybody will agree with that. But when it comes down to Raheem Sterling, I mean, do you think a performance like this would give Poch more incentive to play him as sort of at least, maybe not as a starter, but maybe at least as a super sub?
Okay, I've been liking I've well the super sub, sure. Like I mean if he's off the bench, I mean if he's not starting, he's gonna be probably one of the first people off the bench always, because he is, at the end of the day, he is a starting caliber player. Like whether we don't like what he brings to the club or not, like he's definitely a starter in the Premier League. He has been for years. So I've liked what I've seen from Nico Jackson on the wing. I think he plays better on the wing than as a striker. Like we know that that was his natural position. Like I likened him it to like a Gabriel Jesus, where like he can play striker, but he is better as a winger. Like his like dribbling, his like his you know, first time passes, but he's not necessarily the best finisher, best goal scorer.
Yeah, so he needs to polish up his game a bit.
Yes, but I like him a lot on the wing. And obviously Cole Palmer is undroppable. Like, I would like to start Nkunku. Like, I think the only reason why he's not starting today is probably because he's, you know, still coming back from missing another month after missing, you know, the first however many months of the season originally. So, you know, I have no doubt that Poch is limiting his minutes. Like, it doesn't make sense on a tactical, like basis to not start our best player. Like, yeah, it has to be injury related. So I would say moving forward, he's like a nailed on starter. And I would hope, I just like pray that Pochettino continues not playing Raheem Sterling at left wing.
Well, at least to start. But to your point about Nkunku, I think Nkunku not starting today is more of a result of how well this team performed against Villa. Because like I said, I chose this team too. I said maybe Nkunku could come in. Like, I could see that, you know, if we need to rotate or whatnot. But in general, against Villa, you know, the whole front four played really well. And I'm talking about Nico Jackson, Connor Gallagher, Cole Palmer playing in those central roles, and Noni. But now that we kind of we're getting to see the real Noni in the sense that he's not the finished product, he is going to be inconsistent. That just kind of seems who he is, at least at this point in his career, from match to match. You don't really know what you're going to get from him. So I do think against City, especially, and maybe even moving forward, Noni should be the guy coming on at right wing if we need, you know, to inject some pace or directness into the team. But I want to see Cole Palmer continue to start out on the right or continue to play on the right, but he needs to start there.
Exactly.
Because it seems like he's way more comfortable playing as a winger, cutting inside on his left, picking out passes, taking shots, you know, running the channels. Even though he doesn't have the most pace, like Nkunku, he has an extremely high IQ. He makes the right runs at the right time. Like, his timing is phenomenal off the ball. Poch, you know, he does seem to kind of overthink things sometimes. And this was his Achilles heel at PSG. Like, I remember the players were, you know, talking shit about him when he left. And I don't know who said it, but I remember there was a statement by one of their players saying, like, oh, like now we can play. Something along those lines. And that kind of speaks to how Poch kind of overthinks things. Like, he has a little bit of pep in a cup final vibe about him. Where he doesn't... where, like, he kind of tries something new every single time, and it just doesn't pan out, and then we're playing catch-up, and then he has to, you know, use his in-game management to kind of get us back into the game, or use his subs, whatever it might be. But I think today the tactics were just kind of off, especially in that first half. Like, again, I mentioned, there wasn't a threat centrally. No vertical runs in behind, and it's not like Palace did play a low block, but it wasn't like there wasn't any spaces. Like, there was tons of space behind the fullbacks that we could have just sent a runner through, you know, play a ball over the top or play a through ball. But we just didn't see any of that. And I do blame the players in a way, but I also have to blame Pochettino, because he should have harped on this. Like, this was the recipe for success against Villa. You know, the overlapping, the underlapping, the central players changing positions with the wide players and pulling their defense and midfield apart. Like, we just didn't see that. But I do have to say, to his credit, going into that second half, whatever the fuck he told them at halftime worked. And Conor Gallagher spoke about it after the match and said, you know, the manager made some changes and, you know, it worked out for us. Like we were able to play more freely. So to his credit, we're finally starting to see, you know, some reaction from the team after a bad half, or even after a bad match going into, you know, from Wolves Villa.
Yeah.
I think it was a 10 out of 10 against Villa. But if you had to rate him today, and I'm talking about Pochettino, what do you give him? Because the first half was dog shit. But the second half, I mean, you can't ask for a better reaction.
One half was bad. One half was good. 5 out of 10. That's half of 10.
Yeah, you give them a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, no, because Zach, like, I mean, I've already mentioned this like 3 times on this podcast, but it's his inability to do the obvious things that really pisses me off. And like, you want to give him credit for making the decision, making the right decision at halftime. Like, sure, I'll give him credit for that. But what about the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times before that when he didn't make the right decision, when he doesn't do the obvious thing and it doesn't work out? Like, he's got to, he's had it figured out multiple times this season and then reverts back to what he's done previously that didn't work for, you know, I mean, sometimes it's spurned by an injury, you know, like, and it's hard to like bring it back in to what they were doing before, but it's like, I've never understood why you change things up when players are out. Like, don't you want to kind of establish an identity? Like, play it, even if you're not playing with your best players, like, just like continue making, like, playing the same way, and just so you can establish that with the team, you know, with the rest of the players. So yeah, I'll give him credit. He's got to just keep it up. Be consistent. Don't overthink it, man. It's simple.
Yeah.
Your job really isn't that hard.
I mean, look, there's still so many frustrating aspects to the way he managed the team the last 2 matches, or at least in this match. One thing that was glaringly obvious to me, it's so clear to everybody that Chukwuemeka and Nkunku combine so well together when they play close to each other. Why didn't Chukwuemeka come on when we were chasing the game today?
Instead, he put on Sterling.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, look, Sterling, again, positive performance on the whole. Like, his decision was proved correct. But the obvious decision, play Chukwuemeka. You brought him on against Liverpool. He got the assist to Nkunku. He was combining really well, created 2 or 3 chances.
Okay.
Probably could have got us back into the game if we had better finishing. But
and who do you put him on for? You take out Gallagher?
No, I don't think you take out Gallagher. But like, I still think the right move was to take out Nico because he wasn't offering much.
Okay.
But shift things around a little bit. Where
does Chukwuemeka play?
Chukwuemeka could even play in Nico's position. I mean, let him tuck inside. If Cole Palmer's going to occupy the wide space on the right, Chilwell's going to occupy the wide space on the left, you can almost play with an extra midfielder in Chukwuemeka, maybe even change up the shape a little bit to get a little bit more penetration, to get more players in the attacking areas. Like, I don't know. That's one of the obvious decisions that really bothered me. The other obvious decision that bothered me was not putting Nico in a central position earlier on in the match. If it's not happening 25, 30 minutes in, you could still make tactical tweaks in the first half, and we didn't see any of that. Like, there was no obvious change from minute 1 to minute 45. It was the same football, the same positions, the same players playing in the same spots. So that's like another obvious thing to me. I would say the most obvious mistake he's made all season, and he's rectified it as of late, was like Sterling would have 3, 4, 5, even 6 bad games in a row, and he would continue to play them, even though we have other players that can probably play in that position. But, you know, there is give and take, and I understand that he's still trying to figure out exactly who these players are and who this team is, but you would think that, what, how many months has it been now since August? 6 months into the job?
Yeah.
He probably had 40 matches with these players between, you know, 35 matches, let's say, between cup competitions, 40 if you count preseason. Like, you would think that he would figure out, you know, the chemistry between players, the who combines well with who. You know, where is Cole Palmer's best position? It's not at the false nine. It's not up top. It's out wide. You know, like, so maybe he is figuring it out now. That's my hope. I'm going to keep the glass half full in that sense and say, like, you know, he saw the performance from Nkunku today. Even though he didn't get on the ball much, he impacted the game. You know, Cole Palmer on the right-hand side, I think that's a shoe-in. It should be. You know, obviously Connor Gallagher being unleashed in his role, like you mentioned, Caicedo and the changes in his role, Enzo and the changes in his role, playing Axel Disasi at center back, who would have thought that he can actually play well in his natural position? Like, you know, obvious decisions yeah, like man. That, you would hope that he'd stick with it. But I don't want to dwell too much on Poch because, you know, we are in the top half of the table again. We're in 10th. We leapfrogged Wolves. And I wasn't going to mention it on the pod today, but I'm going to mention it anyways. If we beat Wolves some, we would have been right behind Man United sitting in 7th.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating.
Yeah. Okay, and there's final thing on Poch. Like, he is really fucking lucky. Like, I think he was on his way out. And the last two matches bought him some time. So, he, like, needs to figure it out right now.
Yeah.
Like, and he has the opportunity to. Just don't fuck it up, bro. Come on.
We got a cup final at the end of the month.
Yep.
So it's the clock's ticking. You know, he better, you know, we have to keep this up, basically.
Even if we don't win that, like, you know, like, it's not like if we don't win, he's fired. But we just got to play.
We got to play, like, well.
Respect. We can't lose 4-1.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the main, like, I'm not going into that cup final thinking we're going to win it. This is, like, probably the least confident I felt going into Wembley ever as a Chelsea fan. But I agree with you. I think the key is playing well. Like, having a positive performance. Even if we don't win, we need to give Liverpool a run for their money for the full 90 or the full 120 if it goes into extra time, whatever it might be. But let's talk about something a little more depressing, Sam. We go to the Etihad on Saturday. And Man City, obviously, they're second in the table. They still have a match in hand, so they could potentially go top of the table next week. I know they have two Premier League matches. But look, Haaland is back in form. De Bruyne is back in form. Phil Foden and Alvarez have just been lightning rods for them this season. They got Doku back. It's going to be a tough match. I mean, let's just be completely honest with ourselves. Like, I'm not going into this expecting that we're going to continue picking up wins. But similar to my thoughts on the cup final, I want to have a positive performance. I don't want to get blown out. I don't want this match to be over at the halftime whistle. So with that being said, let's just kind of go through the lineup. I mean, I think the back four pretty much picks itself. If Malo Gusto's healthy, he starts at right back. Chilwell's obviously going to start at left back. You're going to have Disasi and Colwill playing at center back, right? Petrovic mm-hmm. staying in goal. He's not going anywhere.
Right.
Midfield picks itself. I think you got Caicedo and Enzo. You have to keep Gallagher in the squad because he's probably, you know, one of our most informed players at the moment.
And didn't he score against City in the first matchup? Yeah, right?
I think this so. Was his first. No, this was his first Premier League goal. Was today.
Gallagher?
Yeah.
No.
In the league.
Oh, was it? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Did I say he has two goals? I don't know.
But I think the question mark here and what I wanted to talk about was the attack. I mean, let me just give you my attack and tell me if you agree. I'll go player by player, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want Nkunku up top. We need a finisher up top. Agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Nico Jackson on the left. I want pace out wide.
Yeah.
Cole Palmer on the right.
Yeah.
There we go.
I'm picking the same lineup.
Yeah.
Identical.
It has to be the same team. Or it has to be that team. Yeah. The second half team. I don't want to give predictions, but I mean, how do you feel going into this?
Oh, you know what I'm remembering? I think Gallagher hit the crossbar like a couple, like he had a lot, like three or four big shots that should have been goals, like in that last one. Like, look, the last matchup was a classic. That was the most entertaining match of the season.
Mm-hmm. For the neutral, at least.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, even for me. That was an amazing match. You know Cole Palmer's gonna ball out. Like, I don't want to go into it with hope, but like, I don't hate our chances. Like, we do play City well every time. Where is this match? Do you know?
Away.
Okay, so that's, yeah. But it's the Etihad, so it's not really a home field advantage. It's pretty much playing in a library. So I don't know, man. I don't hate our chances. Like, if we walk away with a point, like, don't be surprised.
Oh, a point would be like a win. I'll celebrate it like a win if we get a draw.
Maybe.
But I agree with you. Like, I don't think we're gonna. I mean, based on the vibes I'm feeling right now, and maybe I'll eat my words after Saturday, but I don't think we're gonna get absolutely just destroyed. At least that's my hope. I think these players.
That's as positive as you can get. I don't think we're going to get absolutely destroyed.
Well, look, I mean, like I said,
the
last time we played City, De Bruyne wasn't playing. And I think scored or assisted in every single match. I mean, look, he's fucking probably the best player in the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's a huge factor going into this game.
Yeah, you can argue that Haaland is the second best player in the Premier League.
Yeah. And so. Phil Foden's been one of the best players, and Alvarez has been one of the best players. I mean, you just kind of go down City's list and
Jeremy Doku, yeah.
I think it's too tall of a hill for us to climb, but I do
think we've said that before and won.
Well, then I'll say it again and hopefully we'll win.
But we're not going to get absolutely destroyed, right, Zach? That we can guarantee.
I hope not. I won't guarantee it, but I hope not. Here's the thing. If City score in the first half, there's a very high likelihood we get rolled over.
I thought the same thing would happen today. The boys got balls, Zach. That's the episode title.
The boys have balls, and we better show them to Man City this weekend. I mean, do you have anything else to add before we wrap this one up?
2-2 draw.
2-2 draw. Hard fought. 2-2 draw. You're bringing back the vibes from...
Not even that. I genuinely believe that.
Yeah, I mean, we've proven that we can cut City open. I don't think any other team scored 4 goals in a match against them this season. So, with that being said... Let's hope for a 2-2 draw. If you're not following us on Twitter already, make sure you are at Blues on Parade. I do apologize. It was my fault. I didn't post the questions tweet like I normally do after the match. But, you know, it is a Monday and I was working. So, you know, right after the match ended, I had to turn it off and get back to my responsibilities as an adult. But I'll post a questions tweet after Saturday's match. We'll definitely be recording a podcast, just kind of going over, you know, the outcome and what we saw, what we think. And if you want to, you know, be included on the podcast, if you haven't asked a question already, because we do have a lot of regulars and I appreciate all of you, make sure you ask it. Even if it's a comment, you know, there's a chance you could get read out on the podcast and we'll discuss it. I do like hearing different opinions, even if I don't necessarily agree with all of them. It's just nice to get some perspective. So, with that being said, 2 wins on the spin. Axel Disasi diving into the 8th row for celebrations. Nico Jackson's 1 yellow card away from a 2-match suspension, but it's okay because it was worth taking the yellow, running across the pitch off the bench. But the vibes are back for now, Sam, and let's keep them rolling into the weekend. Keep the blue flag flying high.